TSIA published a paper titled The Emerging 20, which outlines 20 potential use cases for AI in improving workflows related to revenue generation. We are currently conducting a research journey in which we look at use cases proving to be the most impactful for revenue generation. As part of that research journey, I'm meeting executives from AI startups that have solutions related to revenue generation. And today, we will meet two of those executives to get their insights on where AI can be a game changer for reducing costs and accelerating growth. I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. Today, I will be talking with Seth Harpern and Derek Butts, the co-founders and co-CEOs of Embrace, an AI startup that is helping companies accelerate their go-to-market workflows. So let's get the insight engine humming. Welcome, Seth and Derek. I'm going to start with you, Seth. How long has Embrace been around, and what was the catalyst for starting the company?
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it, Thomas. Embrace, we're about a year and a half or so into our journey. We formally incorporated April of 2023.
Newbies here.
Yeah, relatively new for sure. It feels like, you know, sort of forever ago and yesterday at the same time. The time has gone really quickly. There's a few things that really led us to launch Embrace. One is, you know, there's just been this fundamental platform shift that's happening in technology. And, you know, as Derek and I are veterans of enterprise technologies, we've observed all the shifts, internet, cloud, mobile, et cetera. And it really struck us that AI was just a fundamental platform shift that will create tremendous value, new companies, you know, disruption in a lot of different ways. So that was one thing we observed, which probably many of your listeners have seen. Second of all, there were things that we lived professionally that felt solvable leveraging generative AI. My last corporate role before starting Embrace, I was general manager of a B2B business and had sales, growth marketing, customer success teams rolling up to me. We sold a highly technical product to highly technical customers. And there was, you know, so much content around product capabilities that seemed very obvious to be able to draw from in different ways. Yeah. And it felt like generative AI could be an unlock. So those are a couple pieces. The third one is just the right co-founder. As you mentioned, you know, Derek and I are co-founders and co-CEOs. I'd always aspired to build a technology startup. Derek and I have 15 years of experience dating back to, you know, 2010 at Workday, where we work really closely together.
I was going to ask that to be co-founders. Yeah. You guys better know each other pretty well.
100%. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, I think of Derek like beyond my family. There's almost nobody I spend more time with, you know, than Derek. So that partnership is critical. And there was a lot of trust. There are shared values, but also, you know, differing strengths that are really complementary. And, you know, I think we've always been sort of friends and professional collaborators. And this is like one of the very, very few people that I can see partnering in this way. So those were a few of the things that led us to launch Embrace.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And Derek, I'm going to bring you in here in a minute. But, you know, I just opening up here, I was literally listening to one of my technology podcasts. It was Hard Fork. It's a New York Times one. And they were talking about the AI bubble and sort of this talk track that generative AI is overblown. It's just helping people summarize meeting notes and helping kids do their homework. There's real no use case here. And everyone knows who listens to this podcast. I mean, I am just so not on that square, and we're going to get to it today. So this whole emerging talk track that this is just overblown, I just don't buy it. I just don't buy it. And so I think, you know, this is like you put on the table. This is a really exciting time. There are new capabilities here that can make a big difference in a lot of workflows. So as I stated, you know, we're researching how AI can impact workflows related to revenue generation. And I mentor this executive at a really cool marketing firm that you guys know, Inverta. And she was the one showing me your tool. And she was saying, oh man, this is really cool. It helps my sales team when they're creating proposals. And I'm like, I got to meet these guys because we're doing this research. So here we are. And I want to bring you in, Derek. So talk about some of the use cases that Embrace is seeing that you think are the most promising.
Yeah. Well, Thomas, I think, you know, maybe as a headline, what you just said a moment ago resonates very deeply. We just think that there are going to be very few workflows in the revenue cycle that aren't impacted by generative AI. Now, what I'd also say is, like any major technology wave, there are, you know, there's the early days and then there's maturing. And one thing that we have found is really important is differentiating between what is achievable today, where can you have impact today, and what things are on the horizon. And I think, you know, back to the potential hype cycle and the place where people don't think Gen AI will have an impact, you know, some of those things are just going to take a little time to mature. But what we've really been seeing is there's some low-hanging fruit that we've come across very quickly in working with executives, marketing leaders, et cetera. And the first place we started was around net new revenues from net new customers. You know, that is what comes to mind when people think about revenue. As we've dug into that, what is really core to break through in today's world when you're signing up a new customer is establishing your point of view in the market, creating the narrative, and genuinely and honestly communicating what you stand for. And that comes back to content and content marketing. And this is one of the, you know, clear paths from a sales enablement and a go-to-market perspective that we immediately were able to address with Embrace. So you have a constant stream of new BDRs, sales reps, marketers who need to get up to speed and be intelligent about the message, be able to communicate effectively. We've seen huge lift for our teams. And you had mentioned this, you know, as part of how you got introduced to Embrace is you're seeing this very much on the net new side, proposals, et cetera. But the thing that was perhaps a little less expected for us, but something that we've seen over and over again, is the importance of your existing customer base in driving your long-term value as a company.
Yeah, and, oh, absolutely.
You know, the land and expand people talk about often in SaaS. Well, often the land is actually a fraction of the potential total lifetime value of a customer. And what we have heard, our very first customer, the first thing they asked is, what can you do for us post-sale? Can you help us with customers that are coming to us with questions? Because the path to us earning a renewal, a path to us earning an upgrade is actually providing great relationship, great service as we go. And so what's happened for us is where we initially started around enabling those sort of net new
sellers,
we have now been asked to look at the entire customer life cycle, because what we're seeing, particularly in the economic environment we have, is a lot of companies want to make sure their, and if you're in SaaS, your GRR and NRR metrics are rolling, but that you're actually honoring the promises you made to customers, because that's what's going to earn the revenue over time. And so we see a huge opportunity to drive success, not only in net new, but also with your existing customers.
You put a lot on the table there, and I want to go back and unpack some of the points there. So one of them around the fact that there are some things that AI can't do, it's futures, but there are real world use cases that are mature right now. And that's one of the messages that we have. I was talking to the CEO of one of our member companies 2 weeks ago. And he said, look, you know, we want to do something with AI. We don't know what to do with AI. There's a lot of hype. A lot of stuff's too high level. And I said, look, you know, go to our website, look at these use cases we're writing up. There are a lot of below the waterline use cases that are mature right now. And so I think people, you can't lose sight of that if you're in a technology company. The other thing that you're talking about, the fact that it's so important to enable post-sales, I can tell you from, again, talking to a lot of member companies, the reality right now in the current economic environment is that SaaS companies specifically are saying, look, there were the good old days, I would come up for renewal and my customer had more employees, so I had more seats, I had more revenue no matter what. That doesn't happen all the time now. A lot of my customers are flat on employees or declining. So I've got to figure out other ways to add value. I've got to figure out other ways to expand. And so this maniacal focus on the install base is very clear in the current environment. But let's talk about, again, some of these use cases. I do want to back up before we get to the post-sales. Let's talk about the practical use cases you're seeing on the pre-sales. And like you say, you have new salespeople coming in. They got to get up to speed with your product. They need to understand how to pitch the customer. Put a little more meat on the bone in terms of what the actual use case is.
So one of the core use cases we see is around enablement and getting people up to speed. So every company has an incredible amount of content about their products, about their services, about their company, about their values. Being able to communicate that crisply, clearly, concisely from anybody in any seat and go to market is critical. But what we learn very quickly is this is a manual process today. It is a sales rep going to Slack or Teams and asking a question to a product leader. That can be automated. The key, though, is being able to understand and ingest all the content from where it is and being able to surface it at the point of time, at the point of need for that seller so that they can quickly answer questions. They can represent the company's products effectively to an existing customer or a net new prospect. And so for us, unlocking that knowledge and surfacing at the point of time, at the point of need for the right individual is critical. And so that really translates into how do you bring the conversation to the surface areas where your customers are living and to where your sales reps are living. And for customers, that can be on your website, in your product. Yep. For sellers, that can be in internal tools. And so that use case of unlocking the knowledge and really thinking about it as a knowledge transfer pipeline as opposed to a silo where you just go in for your sales enablement. We see that as a very clear use case. Related to that is proposal response. We hear one of the hardest things for companies in answering an RFP or an RFI is not managing the process of it. It's managing the content and actually getting the content and getting a response back in due time. And that's something that is just a clear use case that we can knock down. A third one is questions. Prospects have questions. And often what stands between a sale and a no sale is a clear, honest answer about a product capability. And if you have a new seller, getting that level of depth often is a runaround internally. Yeah. And so it's really a self-service opportunity for sellers and for customers.
So let's talk about what feeds your models, right? So if you're talking, let's go again back to the early part of the sales process. I'm working on an RFP response or a proposal or even just a presentation. I'm trying to get information. I'm going to go pitch this customer. So, you know, so talk about the data streams in there. Is it product manuals? Is it PowerPoint presentations from subject matter experts? Is it what feeds the engine? Just so people understand that.
So I'd say one of the core approaches to our product that we've taken is giving our customers control in terms of what content they're leveraging for a variety of different purposes. Right. So effectively, part of our value proposition is leveraging, you know, the conversational power of generative AI and the large language models, but really coupling it with a gated universe of content across one or many content collections as we think of them. So for our customers, that often is leveraging existing content pools, which could be their website or, you know, part of their website. It could be, you know, on the sort of post-sale side, it could be a knowledge base that many companies have. But is oftentimes like difficult to really tap into in
to a navigate,
way. And so we can bring in that knowledge base, but it could also be, you know, Word docs, PDFs, slide decks, spreadsheets.
Yeah. And
generally, we work with a broad set of text content.
And what I'd add to that, and something that was maybe not as intuitive when we started, is there's quite a bit of content that are outside the four walls of a company that are critical to the selling process. And this could be, if you provide accounting services to folks, this could be understanding what's going on with new tax regulations. If you embed partner technologies, this could be being really smart about those technologies. And what we find is that the ability to span different content sets, no matter where it is, and bring it together so that the question can be answered in a self-service manner is part of building the trust a sales rep needs to build with their prospect and say, no, I can get you the answer. I'm not going to just send you on a runaround to a XYZ website.
Yeah. I'm going to put two things on the table with this. So the first one, again, and why I'm so bullish on these AI use cases is companies have so much knowledge sitting around in all these silos, so siloed in a B2B company, as you guys know. And it could be PS people creating killer PowerPoint decks that only they know about, right? Or support people have their knowledge base, and it's marketing has something over here. So the ability to create and curate all that content into an engine, I think, again, is super powerful. The other thing that you were just on there, Derek, about, you know, customers being able to self-serve, I think one of the dramatic impacts of AI in B2B is going to be what we call this flip to a digital-first customer engagement model. So if you think about from the time we're selling to people to then we're servicing them, what we do is we put labor in front supported by technology. And we are convinced that that is going to flip and it's going to be technology first, even in the sales cycle. Customers, like you're saying, they're going to get their own answers, they're going to be self-serving, they're going to be learning. And then, okay, then I'll put some labor in to support that if they need some help. But I think most enterprise technology companies don't have their head around that yet on the sales side. They do on the support side, but they're not thinking in those terms on the sales side. I'd be curious what you're seeing.
I would say you're exactly right. And I'll make a comment and then Seth would love your thoughts on this. You're exactly right. And what we're seeing in the research is that people will abandon if they can't self-serve.
Yeah.
That is something that as consumers
in the sales cycle, in the sales cycle.
Right, if I can't find an answer easily on my own, I'm going to go somewhere else. And I may go to a competitor website and then come back to you and ask questions about how you compete with them. Well, that's, once I get to that conversation, the salesperson better understand that this prospect you're talking to has done their research, has looked around, maybe has had some digital conversations with your company. So you've got to meet them where they are. But I think your framing of a digital first customer experience is exactly right. And Seth, I'd be curious your point of view on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so some of this is driven by technology and just how the technology is shifting. Some of it is, I really think, generational in nature. And what I've seen as, you know, somebody that's led a variety of sales organizations, buyers increasingly want to do their own homework and research and get pretty far along in terms of making a decision before they engage with the salesperson. And there's a point in time where they very well may want to engage with sales, but the dialogue doesn't need to start with sales. Mm-hmm. And so I agree wholeheartedly that there can be a level of dialogue that AI can help enable in a really personal way. Web Property and other places, I mean, we at on embrace.ai, like we have embedded our technology on our own homepage so that people can do some exploration. Obviously, they can reach out to us, book a demo, but they can do their own exploration in terms of our product capabilities, what industries we're focused on, et cetera. And we think the market will move farther in the direction that you're describing.
And, you know, it's interesting. So one of the counters I get from companies when we talk about this flip we think is going to happen is they say, well, look, people buy from people. And when people are writing big checks in tech, people buy from people. And I don't disagree with it, but I think the square both you guys are on here is they're going to be doing so much self-serving and long digital, you know, sales cycle before they get to that people part that if you aren't building for that and you're just counting on this people buy from people mentality, I think, you know, you're digging a hole. I think you're digging a hole in today's world for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm totally with you. And you know, as somebody who's lived through a lot of enterprise sales cycles at, you know, companies like SAP and Workday, that relationship matters a lot, right? Companies are not going to make seven-figure buying decisions without engaging directly, but they are increasingly going to want to do more homework and due diligence before they get to that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's shift gears into how your firm helps customers implement this technology. Because when I talk to companies and they're sort of stuck on what to do with AI, they're stuck on what use cases to focus on first. And they're also stuck because they're like, internally, we don't have this talent. We don't know the right use of the technology is. We're, you know, this is a whole new world for us. We got to build new muscles here. And especially if you're dealing with people on the sales side of it, that maybe they have some sales ops, but they may not have deep technical chops. So yeah, how do you guys engage here to move people along?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a few things we do. One, you know, I think there's this point about understanding what's the relevant use case for the buyer. We try and make it, you know, very real in sort of the valuation process in terms of how customers can use us. So, you know, generally on a first call, we're demoing the product with customer content and we're finding ways where we can explore the value proposition for that particular prospect. We've built our solution for usability and very business user centric. We want to be able to sidestep the requirement for deep technical talent. I think we're not unique, but we're maybe a little bit unusual in terms of amongst our first 10 hires was a product design leader who is really focused on user experience and usability. And we're taking an input from the market, from design partners, shaping our solution and trying to make it so that a business user can very quickly get value out of the solution. Obviously, we spend time training. You know, even though our solution is not complex from a usability perspective, we want to make sure our users understand capabilities, features, functions, et cetera. We work with them around content curation because even small, you know, size companies actually have large masses of content. And so identifying and iterating on content is a key step. It's interesting, and I'm sure you've seen this, Thomas, but sort of the business world is learning how to prompt. It's, you know, sort of people that are moving in AI have gotten used to it. But really, there is this how do you make a request in a way that gives you the output that you're looking for? And so we spend time in terms of prompting. And then oftentimes we'll work with them to tune an agent to really match with some of the specifications of their use case in terms of like brand tone of voice, specific instructions, disclaimers, if they'd like to post those. To really further personalize it for their situation.
Can we click into the prompt engineering piece a little bit of it? And I know this from our own experience because we are heavy users of AI as we create research content, et cetera. And that's one of the lessons we learned, right? Is that, boy, the way you ask a question, you know, against your own content is really going to generate a different quality answer. And so we started to create a, you know, basically a prompt library that people could leverage and reuse. So how do you help instill that capability within your customers? Do you build a library for them? How do you go about that?
Yeah, there's a couple things we do, and then you know maybe Derek weigh in. One is there's a piece that can be invisible to the sort of the day-to-day user of Embrace at a particular customer, which is building a set of agent instructions in terms of how to provide outputs, you know, for every prompt that's put against Embrace. And that could be brand tone and voice, which, you know, certainly on the marketing side is interesting. Being able to give instructions in terms of particular approaches to, you know, using abbreviations or not, sort of technical jargon or...
To interrupt you, I'm just going to pause it real quick because people may not be aware, again, if they're just getting into these models. But what you just said is super important there because we did the same thing within TSIA is you train your AI model to, in our world, speak TSIA speak, to speak in our voice, to use, you know, our definitions of things. And that's so important. Again, if we're using it to help us write research, you want it to be in the voice of your company. So people may not be aware that you can train the system to do that. And it's an important step.
Yeah.
I mean, we see it mattering for so many marketers that, you know, the one other piece that I'd add is we try and get really granular with users that are in Embrace in terms of just prompting best practices. You know, it's interesting. We'll see people put in prompts as they would a Google search. You know, they will put in
short,
two
stubby
words. Absolutely.
That's what we learned. Yeah.
And also highlighting use cases from power users at our customers so that people can understand like, there are actually like non-obvious applications where they can get value.
What I would add to that is in the same way that we talked about the revenue lifecycle earlier on and the importance of your customers getting successful from a product perspective, making it simple for the things that should be simple. I can get my content in here. I can curate a collection and prompt against it. I can create another collection. I can talk to multiple ones. What we're finding is that taking the technical burden off of our business users for curating content, for explain to Embrace how it should work so that the focus can be on how do I get the right output has been really important. The other thing that we're finding is the people that are living in the content today in the revenue lifecycle inside a company, they tend to be a few clicks ahead on understanding where it is, how to prompt it, et cetera. And so what we're finding is very quickly, even before someone has signed up in a trial process, within a couple of weeks, we'll work with that core set of folks that understand where the content is, understand what the questions are. It's sort of a butterfly. In every company, there's a few people that really understand both sides, and they are heavily taxed. Unlocking them from the menial work of manually connecting the dots, sending the Google Doc over here, and so you have it in one place. What we're finding is a flywheel effect with those folks around how
those
do you prompt?
Users.
And then being able to show folks, the administrators, the folks who are on the back end of the content, what are people asking? Where do you not have content? Where are there opportunities to reach out to this group of sellers, marketers, CS people to spot train? Because you can see it in the dashboard of who is asking great prompts. How do you propagate that? And so making it really easy for folks to see success as well as to see where things aren't working without having to call IT is critical. We're seeing to this sort of the flywheel of improvement on prompt engineering, and it propagates relatively quickly.
Yeah, I think this is a common scenario, again, where you have these power users with these new tools that are quickly figuring out the value proposition and they lean in very quickly, right?
Yes.
And then the goal then is how do you drive that broader adoption so everybody realizes it? And I'm curious, let's talk a little bit about the life cycle, because the other thing I hear, again, for companies that may be more cautious, more hesitant on these tools, you know, one thing, they're nervous. I don't have the technical capabilities. Folks like you can come in and help with that and, again, help them curate the content, et cetera. But if I raised my hand today and I said, look, I got to have better content tools to help my salespeople and my post-sales people, from the day that, you know, I raise my hand, what is that timeline before you see effective adoption, even if it's just these power users, that is starting to impact the company positively? Is that a 3-month journey, a 6-month journey? What do you see there? I know you've only been around a year and a half, but
what I'll say, and this has been fascinating for us, for a lot of our customers, in the first 3 to 4 weeks of trying Embrace, they will mm-hmm. see the value, particularly among the power users, because the ability to aggregate and curate content into specific mm-hmm. collections and then prompt against it and get content that today is manual, we have seen, and it's been fantastic. The time to value can be as short as a month or a few weeks. And then rolling it out to broader and broader groups, particularly when you go to customer self-service, you know, tends to be a little more measured. But we're seeing value in weeks, and for larger deployments, maybe a couple of months. That's been rewarding, I think, for customers. And also, you know, I think incentive for us to continue focusing on making the technical pieces more straightforward so people can focus on extracting business value in a sort of a natural, intuitive business way.
So let's talk about time to value, because when we write up these AI use cases for members, one of the things that we're capturing, what technologies, what workflow did you go after? And then what is the business impact? How do you measure that, right? Are you looking at specific KPIs? You know, I'll give you an example. Dell uses AI models to determine when they should deploy spare parts or not. And the AI models do a better job of predicting, right? And so they save like 15% in not shipping stuff. That's huge, right? So that's a very clear KPI. So when you say time, you know, to value, how are your customers basically assessing that value? Is that hours spent by, you know, a salesperson or CS person? Is it, you know, increased revenues? I mean, how do they get line of sight to that?
Yeah, I'll give a couple of examples. We've recently published our first 2 case studies, which are available on our website. One sort of on the post-sale side is really about internal time savings for customer success and support, and then also external sort of customer success in terms of being able to get answers to the questions they have. So on the internal front, their time for support techs and customer success folks who are often slacking each other to try and get answers, now that they're using Embrace, they're able to cut that in half and not engage with another party, because there's 2 parties at least that were historically involved with getting answers. On the external front, we're now in the customer-facing portal for 200,000 of their customers. Historically, those customers would pose a question in search, get a long list of sort of
traditional support AI models
back. Absolutely. And oftentimes they'd sort of give up and they would start a chat, open a ticket, et cetera. Their success rates in that portal presence are now 45% better, 45% mm-hmm. more of the time. And again, this is against a 200,000.
When you say success rates, self-serve, is that how they...
Yep, absolutely. So like a 45% reduction in them having to move to chat or open a ticket, which, you know, creates obvious leverage for those support teams. And then it also gives their customers what they've been asking for, which is better self-service. I'd say on the marketing side, this case study we published recently talked about how that software company is saving 15 to 20% in terms of producing marketing content. And, you know, they, like many marketing organizations, are resource constrained and have, you know, a longer list to do than they have capacity to take on. And so it's helped them be able to get more out sort of through the machine. And then from a direct revenue perspective, their BDRs are armed with Embrace, and they're able sort of in call as they're qualifying a prospect who has questions, they're able to get answers and turn some of those objections into opportunities to move forward and qualify opportunities for the sales team.
Perfect. I want to click into the marketing example you just put there in terms of creating marketing materials. And I want to back up to Eric. You made the comment about data and insights that are outside the four walls of the company. So I have a working theory here that, you know, when it comes to things like creating our positioning, our marketing material on a new offer, you know, that engine can be fed by obviously information about your product, but also outside information about what's, you know, let's say I'm trying to position this to healthcare. I'm trying to position this to financial services, and I want a story to tell, you know, and I've got to go research, oh, what's going on in, healthcare that is important, you know, that we got to connect the dots on our offer. As a marketer, if I could, again, be working against an engine that would be giving me guidance there and say, do a first cut of my case study or my story or my whatever, and be informed by multiple data streams, I think that is going to be a game changer for marketing.
Yeah. And so whether it's understanding competitors, whether it's understanding market
movements.
Competitive
analysis is huge. Yeah.
Whether there's a new press release from an industry organization that's talking about something, you've got this never-ending stream of knowledge that's being published. Yeah. And so what has been interesting for us is I mentioned earlier this idea, or Seth had, about creating discrete collections of content. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're seeing on the marketing side is discrete collections of content that are external so that I can come up to speed. We use Embrace internally all the time to get smart about a prospect's market, a business, about what they do. And so we might have a collection that will have an earnings report, recent press releases, solutions, and we can ask the questions we need without having to read, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages of content. And so we're seeing, as a research and a education tool, on the path to creating your positioning, on the path to creating those unique, differentiated outputs, we're seeing a lot of opportunity. And what we're finding on the prompt engineering side is we'll see something like, okay, I've created a collection of external market research. Embrace, could you give me four ideas about how to write a blog about industry XYZ intersecting with technology? And out comes four ideas. And then the light bulb goes on. Could you draft number three for me? And there's a draft. We typically recommend, because of how much AI content is out there, the drafting process gets consolidated very quickly. The finishing thought is often still a human.
Absolutely. Should, I mean, that's the final differentiator. Totally agree. I mean, and that's how we, what you're describing is how we use it as researchers writing, you know, our content. You use it to do drafts, but you're putting your final imprint on it. You have to, because that's your value add around content.
That's
I want to go, you know, go back to you're describing, I believe another super powerful use case on the sales side is that what you're describing, if I'm prepping for a customer and I'm going to go in and I'm like, okay, I don't, you know, what's going on with this customer? What's going on with their industry right now? That's a lot of searching. That's a lot of, I got to read. I got to try to get smart about this, as opposed to interacting with a tool that is fed with all that latest information. That's going to save hours and hours and hours for an account executive that has a big pitch coming up. And it leads me to my next question. You guys have articulated, you're engaging across the lifecycle now. So you're dealing with CS people, people that are post-sales, but on the front end, you're dealing with marketers. But on the sales side, my observation there again is they're sort of lagging on adoption here. What are you seeing there in terms of just the actual, I'm an account executive, Brace maybe now, you know, being stood up in the company. Do you see them leaning in? Do you see them, or how do you get the lean in? What's your experience there?
Yeah, I think what I've observed on the sales side and you know, what I've seen like through my own experience is salespeople, you know, there's usually a heavy investment when they join a company in terms of training them around product capabilities and so on. Some of that training sticks, a lot of it doesn't.
Right.
And the best way and point in time for a salesperson to learn is when they're in a sales cycle. When they're
Money's online.
Money's online. Absolutely. And somebody says, hey, can you do this? Or how are you different than such and such? And so like that like moment of need is a place that we've really been able to help out with.
That's a great point.
Somebody can very quickly get an answer in terms of technical capability, very quickly handle like a common objection that maybe they've never faced before, and do it, you know, in real, you know, if they're, you know, engaging on a call in real time, if they're preparing to send an email, you know, they can leverage Embrace. And so there's just this, you know, only the very, very, very best and most tenured reps at a company have really sort of hit all the potholes. Everybody
right,
else
exactly.
is still learning.
All the time, right? Well, Seth, what you just described there is music to the ears of every supporting technical person at a B2B technology company, because they all are the receiving end of the salesperson. Like, I got it pitched tomorrow. I need this. Where is that? You know, and if they can be given a tool that spoon feeds that, you know, without having to bug anybody, that is a game changer for everybody supporting that sales 100%. Motion right there.
Yes. They are product marketers, engineers are barraged with questions.
Yeah,
and the salespeople like need the information right now.
Right. Yeah.
So they get their information faster, and it allows like the people that are like doing product marketing, building product, they can focus on doing that instead of answering those questions.
Yeah. That's a great, you know, use case here. I do want to click in a little bit about what it means to be a startup, because the fact that you guys have only been at this a year and a half. So you basically are really from this AI generation. I talked to a lot of, you know, our member companies, and they've been around for 10 years or 15 years. They're SaaS companies now figuring out what it means to use AI. But you literally were born with this capability in play, and you have experience in more traditional enterprise technology companies. What is different if you're an AI startup, your experience so far?
I'll make a couple comments. Our first hire, you know, is a master's in ML and NLP, and his skill set was part and parcel to what we've built. And so when you're building the engineering team, there's a lot of the components that are going to be very similar, right? It looks very similar to SaaS in many ways, but there's a new technology stack. Yeah. And there's a set of skills that are natively required to be adept at understanding that. And so I'd say one of the very first things was our first hire was that a full stack engineer whose background was effectively training for this generation of AI.
Mm-hmm.
A second piece is we are leveraging AI deeply ourselves. So as a native AI company, we're looking, you know, and this ties to profitability, this ties to long-term, how do you build this? But where do you get leverage? How do you get leverage as a startup? And as you know, every startup needs to figure out where we get leverage. And so it is end to end from what Seth is doing on the sales and marketing side, all the way back to what our development team is leveraging so that you can get more production and more cycle. You know, you can increase your cycle time in working with your customers so that your product improves.
Let me ask a question, because we have a working thesis here at TSIA about what we call sort of, you know, AI native companies. And so what you just articulated there, Derek, is the fact that, and this is the thesis, if you're an AI native company like you folks are, every workflow you look at, hey, we've got to create sales presentations. You're going to first say, well, how do I use AI there? Hey, we got to do some marketing. We got to set up our website. How do we use AI? We're going to do support. How do I use AI? Every workflow starts with, where does AI take out labor? And then where I need to put labor, I put labor. All these traditional companies pick the stick up the other way, right? They say, well, I already have a support process. Where could I cram AI in there, right? But I think what happens, because you're thinking of AI in every workflow, if we look at you folks, you know, 5 years from now, I think that your labor stack looks way different than a traditional tech company. I think you are way leaner. I think you have a lot more revenue under management with less people because you are so effective with the technology. So that's my thesis. And by the way, one data point I use to support that thesis, Salesforce right now is about $450,000 revenue per employee, which is fantastic for a traditional software company. That's a great number. OpenAI is like $2 million of revenue per employee. Now, obviously, they have a completely different business model, but there's some there. And so how do you see that playing out? Is that your working thesis as well?
Yes, it is. I would say, you know, it's always good to start with a blank sheet of paper. And especially if you're doing that at sort of like the dawn of a technology shift, which, you know, we're generally on the front end of, even though AI has, you know, there's been investments for decades. So I think there's a piece which is, one, you know, Derek talked about our first hire being an AI-oriented engineer, but what we don't have is a team of AI PhDs that are building our own models. And it's sort of the accessibility of AI capabilities and the various foundation models lets us go faster, because we, you know, let's leave that to the experts on the LLM front. We need expertise in terms of tapping into it and sort of the surrounding technology, but we don't need to, you know, as a resource constrained startup, we don't need to invest in like the deep, deep technical talent at scale. And for sure, everything else that you mentioned, we're building our own marketing content, leveraging Embrace. We are about to roll out to our customers an Ask Embrace button in their environments where, you know, they can engage with support content to get answers to their questions. And we're obviously there for them, but, you know, it can be a first line for them to get access to information. Our engineering team is leveraging capabilities from an AI perspective as it relates to, you know, sort of like code completion, you know, summarization of code. And they're obviously, we haven't been talking about it, but there's a whole set of tools that are rolling out on the AI front as it relates to engineering and writing code. So for us, like, there isn't the baggage of the past. And we can absolutely start new.
Yeah. And what I would add, and this is something you had sort of got at earlier, is in every established organization we're talking to about adopting Embrace, there are people who are actively going out to ChatGPT, who are, mm-hmm. you know, the trailblazers, the power users, yeah. and putting a whole lot of enterprise content out there and yeah. not getting leverage inside the four walls. And
which
and
is no bueno, by the way. That is, I mean, we were, you know, super smart. I mean, we're a research company, right? So we were super smart right away. We said, look, we got to have these models behind our firewall. You don't want your employees putting your content out there into the general models. Big mistake.
That's right. But you also yeah. lose leverage and scale from that. And so yeah. that's one of the things, you know, when Seth talks about kind of these end-to-end, every business process will have AI. Well, part of it is having the tooling available yep. to get yep. leverage and scale. Because if you're a single person going out to a consumer tool, you might get your question answered, but you can't leverage that into a sort of the snowball yeah. effect that we're experiencing yeah. internally, but we're seeing some of our customers start. Because answer that question once, well, you have the ability to propagate that now
right.
in a way that you couldn't yeah. before. And that's a huge point of leverage.
So, you know, Seth, you said an interesting comment that, hey, AI has been around for a long time. And I hear that comment a lot. And it's true. But I would submit AI has been around for a long time, but AI native companies like yourself have not. You have not. So 4 years ago, if I was building a software company, I would not be thinking about how I'm going to use AI in every workflow because it wasn't on the table. But if I'm building a software company today, I am AI native and I'm going to be. So I think, you know, this is a massive shift in the business models of tech. And, you know, one thing that I coach our members on that are not AI native, right? They were, you know, basically incubated a while ago, that you are going to wake up with a completely uncompetitive model if you don't jump on this. Your cost structure is going to just, you are not going to be able to compete. I don't care who you are.
We agree. Not only yeah. your cost model, your cycle times are yeah. not going to keep yeah. up. It's yeah. so much of it is your ability to respond to your prospects, your ability to respond to your customers, your ability to respond internally to what the sales rep over here learned yeah. that can create a ton of value across the 150 that didn't see it in that Absolutely. Cycle. And, yeah. and so we completely agree with you.
Yeah, this is a game changer. Well, hey, I'm watching the clock here, and this has been a fantastic conversation. I really enjoy you coming in. Again, our goal is to just keep reminding our audience that this stuff is real today. It's not futures, and that there's a lot of leverage to be had. There's companies like yourself that are out there that are, you know, ready to help, and you know, you got to get on this train. So I always end these podcasts with a question of the day, and you know, my question to the audience is, are you effectively leveraging AI in your workflows? If not, why not? Cheers, everybody.